Yes.
One, two. Keep going. One, two. What do you need more juice? One, two. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Need more? Yes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Which laptop has a throughput from the VCR? Oh, okay. I have faith, as long as the RCAs are tight. Oh, yeah, you are.
I just want to make sure my team is up
and running. Oh, okay. All right. One, two.
know exactly what's happening, but...
Thank you. He's pulling pretty well, dude.
There you go.
Come on. No, because the terminals are, sorry.
The terminals are coded. You have to be over there.
I have to be over there?
Okay.
I thought he and I agreed the most we should fix each other.
That may be.
Oh. Yeah.
What are we doing here?
You're gonna
use the right. Yeah, you've got to register a machine so you can plug it into the network, and that's a security measure. If you plug in an unregistered machine, it knows.
Ran by high.
Oh, that's what you wrote about in your book.
I was never very good in that.
Oh, I'm just a box in
my
head.
My name used to be Christy. So I'm going to go over there.
And my wife never changed her name.
I was cutting through the woods with my compass.
Well, I didn't read the doctor.
And everything seems to be wrong.
And my father asked me to change her name.
I'm running with a California.
Tried Marilyn and
about 15 degrees.
Amelia and a few others.
And the answer is 15 degrees. So everything was lost by 30 to 40 years. You haven't
pushed some from Mahaganov.
Mahaganov.
I'm sure there was a, in the old country.
Well, welcome. This is a gathering primarily of the internet and society class that usually meets downstairs. So if you're here for the chemistry lecture, I'm afraid it's in the science center today. But if you're here for the ICANN candidates discussion, you're in the right place. And we're incredibly fortunate to have Ben, the computer is bellowing. Can you do something about that? Well, anyway. We're incredibly lucky to have in one place the candidates for the North American seat of the at-large half of the ICANN board. I think I've got that right. And it might even be the first time that you all are, except for one of you, in one place at one time. Now we have two sessions today. This is just the first of the two. The second starting in a Schrodinger-like fashion, either at 7 or 7:30, depending on what paper you consult about it. So we'll be taking the later of the two, 7:30, and 7 will just sort of be a mingle in the hall and greet the candidates individually sort of event. And they can pass out campaign literature and posters and such. We were thinking that today could be pretty informal and a chance for all of you who have studied ICANN in one way or another to get into a dialogue with the candidates who themselves, of course, are quite involved in ICANN and have studied it greatly. We also have a number of technological tools we're going to try out today, and this is a chance to sort of get used to them so that it'll run that much more smoothly when the 7:30 event rolls around. So let me just do a quick inventory of the tolls and then see if we can get the candidates to sort of introduce themselves to get things going. What do we have? First, we have right behind what somebody who is plugged into the online version is seeing, which is me about 2 seconds too late. And then they log in, they get a chat room they can use, and is it only one chat room? There are multiple chat rooms, aren't they? They get shunted into multiple chat rooms, each of which is moderated by one of the people back there at the back table. They chat with those people, all of whom talk to a meta moderator who can then bring questions up from the chat rooms. People online can also fill out a little form with a question or a comment, and somehow that filters out to the top and at the right moment is introduced onto the floor for discussion. We also have a number of questions that the students asked over the course of the weekend through the software provided with the class, and we're hoping to highlight some of those and give the students a chance to ask them as well. So with that, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be useful just to start with Emerson and kind of go down the line and maybe just introduce yourself and say, how is it you came to be sitting at this table today?
Can you hear me fine, or do I need to? My name is Emerson Tiller. I'm a professor at the University of Texas School of Business there. My background is I have degrees in math, law, and a PhD in business and public policy from Berkeley. Yes, they do teach business at Berkeley. It's a very liberal place. I guess I'm here as part of two functions. One was that early on I started following the decisions coming out of the ICONS dispute resolution system and became very interested in that. And by May or June realized there was a lot more to the organization and that it was going to have an election for a position on the board. So I put my name in. It was submitted both to the NOMCOM committee and was rejected. And then I put my name in for the member nomination, and a few people out there voted for me, and so I guess that's why I'm here.
Wonderful. Thanks. Barbara?
It's okay. I'm Barbara Simons. I'm past president of ACM. I stepped down from being president at the end of June of this year after a two-year term. I have a PhD in computer science, also from Berkeley. I think there are at least three of us here with Berkeley PhDs, which again, is a very good place to go. I got involved with ICANN because I have a general interest in technology policy issues. After being ACM secretary from 90 to 92, I started the ACM's Technology Policy Committee, USACM, because I felt that the technical community needed to get involved with policy issues. It was around the time that crypto was just becoming a major issue and the Clipper chip was just being introduced. And since then, I found myself getting more and more involved with these issues, including intellectual property issues, copyright, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, UCITA, the DVD case, and so on. ICANN is dealing with some very fundamental issues. The reason I have devoted so much time, and I think all of the candidates will agree that this has been incredibly time-consuming to this process, is that I feel that the very future of the Internet is at stake. And my main concern, my biggest concern, is that the Internet will go the way of radio, and that all these wonderful opportunities that we see today in the Internet will be lost if we make the wrong decisions.
Hi, I'm Harris Miller, president of the Information Technology Association and the World Information Technology and Services Alliance, and it's a great pleasure to be here at Harvard Law School. My father-in-law was a graduate of this institution as well as Harvard College. I went to a lesser institution, Yale, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a PhD from Berkeley. I'm an ABD in political science from Yale. And my son was looking at colleges last spring. We visited, a year ago spring, we visited Harvard and Yale, and he made the right decision, and he's in New Haven.
You're just trying to curry favor with the class.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it is an honor and a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank Professor Zittrain for giving us the opportunity to participate. My association, the Information Technology Association of America, is based just outside of Washington. And we are a lobbying organization. That's what we do. We do public policy. My background is included 10 years on Capitol Hill and in the administration and 10 years running a lobbying firm in Washington before I took over ITA about 5 years ago. It is a great job. It's fun. It's exciting because all the policy issues you read about, immigration, internet taxation, intellectual property protection, Napster, all those issues are issues that we deal with as an association. And trying to keep my 425-plus companies all on the same page is an interesting challenge. Also, the World Information Technology and Services Alliance, which I head, consists of 41 high-tech associations around the world. So we cooperate not only here in the U.S. and work inside the halls of Congress and in the administration, we also deal with global challenges. And so I spend a lot of time working on these internationally. And so the issue of ICANN has been on the forefront of our agenda for quite some time. We co-sponsored, along with another trade association, one of the first conferences ever on the whole process of moving the control of the naming and numbering system from the government to the private sector back in 1997. I knew we were doing a good job because Network Solutions was screaming at me, but so were people on the other side, so I figured we must have done a pretty good job having the middle road. I testified in Congress on the issue of ICANN several times, and when I was approached several months ago by people involved in the internet community, they said they were going to put my name up in front of the nominating group within the ICANN board. I was selected by the ICANN board nominating committee to be one of the candidates. As Barbara said, the process of getting elected is kind of a strange process. I actually ran for political office one time earlier in my life, and if you knew how to do it then, you went down to the registrar's office, got all the registered voters, got the voters who voted, and you sort of sent them literature. This is a weird process, folks, because we don't know what the electorate looks like. We don't know who's registered, who's not. In fact, a lot of people thought they were registered. It turns out really they're not registered because they never activated their registration. But it still is exciting. It's great to be at the birth of this new governance process, and I'm very excited about the opportunity of serving on the ICANN board.
I'm Larry Lessig, and I come from this place a while ago. Sadly, I am not here now. But I got involved in this process of ICANN at the very beginning when I strong-armed John Zittrain into basically getting involved, and Zittrain then worked to coordinate the Berkman Center's work with the initial birth of what became ICANN. That process occurred through the summer of 98 when an organization called IFWP attempted to construct what was a open and participatory set of principles that would govern this new organization that was to take over the functions that IANA performed. And that organization met across the world in a movable feast of constitution law, like making Geneva, in Reston. And the objective of the organization was to establish principles that would govern this body in a way that would make it consistent with the objectives of the original internet and with most internet users. That process was hijacked. And it was hijacked at the very last moment in the creation of what has become ICANN in a way which I was personally involved in and felt I failed in allowing that process to become hijacked. And at that moment, I was a critic of ICANN and wrote an article in the Industry Standard describing what I thought was the hijacking of this process through extraordinarily traditional and predictable and political processes. I wrote that article and I then was attacked, not by people, I mean obviously the people I was criticizing were upset, but by people I respected, people like John Gilmore, who said to me, you've got to give these people a chance. They're born in sin, but most of us are, and we should see what they do. And so I decided to stand back and watch as this process tried to prove itself. And though there's much that ICANN's done that one could praise, in my view, we're at a critical moment when all the things that we should have feared 2 years ago are on the verge of happening. When the board is discussing, for example, eliminating the possibility of at-large membership, when it's changed the number of at-large members that are being elected from the original 9 to 5, when it's in the center of a fulcrum of powerful interests all alive under the name of intellectual property, whose objective it is to use this organization to advance one particular view of intellectual property. And therefore, ICANN is at a moment when it can become something that I think is quite destructive of what the internet's community wanted it to be. So I was nominated by ICANN, bizarrely, I think, but I was nominated by ICANN. I agreed to run because I do have a conception of what's required to make sure an organization does not become captured by predictable and identifiable interests.
My name is Lyman Chape, and I'm a chief scientist at BBN Technologies here in Cambridge. And BBN Technologies, when it was known as Bull, Peranek, and Newman, is of course the company that actually did invent large parts of the internet back in 1967, 68, and 69. And so I'm thinking I should stick around for tomorrow night's debate as well. I've been involved since then in just about every conceivable aspect of the internet, ranging from writing TCP/IP code for several commercial companies back in the 70s to chairing the Internet Architecture Board. And so I've seen virtually every perspective from which people can look at the internet. And I share a great many of Professor Lessig's concerns about the possibility that an opportunity with which we have been presented in the form of this experiment called ICANN in self-governance is at this point in danger of going awry. And I think it would be a tragic loss of opportunity if that happens. I remember during the course of doing some research recently coming across a interview that David Sarnoff gave in 1956 near the end of his tenure at RCA. And he went on at great length about the wonderful improvements in the intellectual quality of life and the cultural depth of experience that would be visited upon the American people as a result of television. And I recall Barbara's comment about radio. I don't want to see the internet go the way of radio. I don't want to see it go the way of television either. ICANN is an organization that presents an interesting and possibly one time, if we get it wrong, opportunity to see what the term internet community really means. It's an interesting concept. We talk about it a lot. I'm not sure we understand exactly what it means. I think that this ICANN organization gives us an opportunity to explore some of those questions. I'm looking forward to this evening's events and hope that you will all engage us in questions and bring up issues and so forth that we can respond to. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Carl Auerbach, and as you can see, I'm not wearing a tie, I'm a techie. I have no doubt who the internet community is. It's you, it's the people walking down the street, it's everybody on this planet who is going to be affected by the internet. Not everybody who is something to sell, but people who are going to be affected by it. And I'm limited by the cable here, in which I can walk around. As for myself, I've been on the internet since about 1974. I was there before there was such a thing as TCP. I've started several internet companies, some of which have been acquired. In fact, the latest one was acquired by Cisco Systems, which is where I work now in the office of the Chief Strategy Officer in the Advanced Internet Architectures Group. I do research having to do with control systems of the internet. My goal is to try to make the internet, or at least network components, easier to operate. I own trademarks. I have a patent in the works. I know how businesses work. I value intellectual property. However, I value it only as one component of the internet. It has to be balanced against social and cultural needs. Business interests do not supersede those needs. I have to read all this. As I said, I've been involved in the design of the internet for a long time. I've been involved in the internet governance debates since at least the mid-1990s. I've been chair or co-chair of the IETF Working Group on Policies. I was asked by John Postel to be on the IAHC group, which was the first group looking at domain name policies within the context of the IETF. I helped found the Boston Working Group, which is a group that produced a counterproposal to the original ICANN materials, which became the corporation ICANN. I am an attorney. However, I don't practice. I'm mainly a techie. I'm also a theater person and a railroad fanatic.
Thank you. I hope it doesn't mean you all have to come up with something different to say at the 7 o'clock session. But again, we've gotten a preview. And
you should start in the opposite order at 7.
Oh, that's right. That's
we realized
we had a chance for an opening statement.
Yeah, well, it's sort of transmorphed into an opening statement.
I take advantage of that.
So there's one other piece of technology that may be useful, because it's clear that the so-called tour de table as you go down can take quite a long time just to get through one issue. And thus have we placed an IBM ThinkPad in front of each of you, which I guess they're theirs to keep, right? Ben's like, So an IBM ThinkPad is in front of each of you, and what looks like a regular old chat room in front of you, I encourage you not to do something like, how old are you, you know, it's not a chat room. It is in fact a means of answering questions. And what happens is you can type in your answer to a question that appears, and each of you then types it sort of a la Jeopardy or something, and you hit enter, and it appears on a little screen with six blocks, one for each answer. You just type your name and press enter to get started, apparently. And there's no spell check on it. That's quite all right. Wonderful. So you hit enter, and then it appears right in the block, as you see. I think it also encourages a form of brevity, since anything too long just goes beyond the box. And I think there's a way to scroll down, but it's awfully awkward. Lyman and Carl, is your box working? Carl's hacking the box or something.
I'm doing a Perl script.
Carl, you're...
I'm a blank.
You're a blank. Wow. All right, so while Ben fixes your box, we were hoping to just advance a couple questions and see how well this thing works. Is this silly, or is it actually going to be a useful way to get people to answer? We ready, Ben? Oh, there's Carl. Okay. So, see, it's already highly effective. I think you're proving the utility of the system by your very condemnation of it. Okay, so throw up a question, Ben, from the class. Class had all weekend to come up with some interesting questions on everything they've learned, and here is one such question from Lauren Matthews. Lauren, are you here? Where are you, Lauren? Ooh, Lauren's in trouble.
He's hiding.
Oh, well. All right, bad mark for Lauren. So Lauren Matthews, if only she were here, would ask, what is the biggest thing wrong with ICANN today, and what would you do to try and fix it? Now, clearly, this is just a way of kind of breaking into the clam to get past the shell, and there'll be a chance to talk about it. But interested just in, you know, a few words, what's the biggest thing wrong with ICANN today, and what would you do to fix it?
To be more efficient.
There's so many things we need.
Then you don't have the Jeopardy music, do you? I guess it would add a sort of circus-like quality.
For hours, you know.
Oh, exactly. I mean, we're just trying to get a few words to kind of get things started. Oh, I see. They're also going into the chat room on the web. Very interesting. All right, Emerson, are you... Oh, yeah, okay. You're not boycotting. You're just...
Oh, I'm absolutely...
Well, one thing that's jumping out of these little windows is transparency. What a wonderful word. Transparency is jumping out as a huge issue. Lyman, you're the guy that's not sold on this system. Why don't you start by telling us about transparency?
One of the things that any organization that seeks to claim a mantle of authority to speak for a polity, a group of people, is that the way in which it arrives at its decisions and the way in which it deliberates be very open and transparent to the people it claims to represent. And that is something that I think it's fairly clear that ICANN has not been successful in doing. It has not welcomed into its policy-making and decision-making apparatus a sufficiently broad range of representatives from different parts of the Internet community. And in its activities, it has not been able to maintain a level of transparency that would enable those of us who are affected by its decisions to be able to tell whether it's operating according to even its own bylaws, much less any other standards to which we might want to hold it.
Is there any such thing as too much transparency?
There can be. There can be too much transparency in the sense of immediate transparency. Transparency in the sense that the second after I do something, it's immediately I don't know how all of you manage your electronic mail, but I a long time ago decided not to set the immediate send option on my mail client. I like for there to be a delay between what I type into a mail message and it actually being sent. It gives me time to get smarter. I don't know if I'm getting smarter over a very long baseline, but over a period of about 30 seconds, I tend to get a lot smarter. I'm much smarter at the end of those 30 seconds than I was at the beginning. And in that sense, I think you're absolutely right, that too much transparency can actually negate the principle of openness that we're looking for.
Somebody else want to jump in? I don't mean to just play cold call. Barbara?
Well, my first answer was process and procedure needs to be implemented. And I think at the basis of all the problems, one needs, first of all, to allow people to interact. And as long as there's not good process and procedure, as long as it can be possible for someone to be sent a 50-page paper on a Friday and be told there'll be a conference call on Monday to discuss it, so long as we don't have things put up way in advance with notice as to how long people will have to make comments, it will not be possible for the majority of people who want to participate in a meaningful way. This type of this lack of process and procedure significantly disadvantages individuals and it disadvantages representatives of non-commercial entities and people who are concerned about the net for non-commercial reasons. So I think underlining all of the problems that ICANN has, and there are many, many of them, and I'm sure we can all list dozens, is that first of all, we have to make it possible for people to participate in a meaningful way, and that won't happen until there are good processes and procedures in place.
Larry, and then Carl.
Okay. ICANN is internet governance, and it's a representative government. The board members are our representatives. And unless we know how they think, and that means we have to see into their brains, we have to know what material they're receiving, we have to know what criteria is being used to evaluate this material. We need to know what weights they're placing on things. In fact, we even need to know what they decide. Today, we don't know who's voting on what within ICANN. Unless we have all of those, we don't have anything we can call transparency. And without transparency, we have no accountability.
So would you be in favor of a rule that says that as an ICANN director, you're supposed to have a special email inbox and outbox, and if somebody wants to talk to you about ICANN, they've got to send to that special inbox, and that's an inbox that goes right up on the net as the email comes in?
Why not?
And the outbox as well. Somebody does an outbox, including correspondence within ICANN, a question to the lawyer, you know, say, would it be legal if X, Y, or Z happened out on the web?
The only thing that I think should be transparent within ICANN are matters pertaining to the negotiation of contracts, and all that should be made public after the contract, and matters pertaining to personnel.
Gotcha. Larry.
Well, I'm torn on this issue. Obviously, who can be against transparency and participation and including all sorts of groups? I mean, obviously, that's what we're all supposed to be for. But it creates a temptation to become governors, for ICANN to think of itself as the policy-making body. And it therefore fails to keep focused on an extraordinarily important commitment that ICANN made, not to be a policymaking body, to be a technical, a body which is responsible for coordinating technical standards. Now, ICANN has so far announced some extraordinarily important policymaking decisions that I think it has no sanction to make. The Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, which imposes a certain view of intellectual property on the main TLDs and requires them and everybody who registers with these main TLDs to buy into that particular view of intellectual property. That's not ICANN's role. And if ICANN were more focused on making sure that it was not taking sides in these fundamental policy decisions and structuring itself so that it acted with a very small footprint, until perhaps someday in the future, hundreds of years maybe more, it had some authority, some sanction to speak for the internet community, then it can begin to worry about how it becomes the best policymaker. I think its objective now should be focused on teaching itself not to become a policymaker,
And so while I agree that the main name supporting organization doesn't have the proper balance of constituencies, there's too much interest for trademark organizations, intellectual property organizations, the first thing to worry about is that this organization not function as a governing body, mainly because it's wrong and also because an extraordinary paper by Michael Frumkin points this out, I think, quite well. It renders what ICANN is doing illegal in the United States context in a way which will, in my view, destabilize the opportunity we have to use ICANN as a facilitator of technical standards.
Harris.
Nonsense. What Professor Lessig says is nonsense. You know, it's really tough to set up a new organization, folks. Our founding fathers found that out 200 plus years ago. I found it out creating organizations. And ICANN's doing a pretty doggone good job. And I'm not going to be part of let's rip it up for the sake of running for office. That's a cheap way out. The question is ICANN making decisions which they apparently are trying to achieve as broad-based input as possible? Are they getting that input? And then are they reaching decisions based on the input they have? Whether various critics like it or not, ICANN has to make some decisions. Now, you may disagree with the decisions because they haven't done a good enough job yet of developing consensus. But for ICANN to simply sit back and do nothing and make no decisions because a few people are dissatisfied with the decisions means there might as well not be an ICANN. In fact, why don't we just turn it back to the Department of Commerce or back to the NSF and let them take control of it again? I think we have to realize ICANN's made some mistakes. I believe some improvements need to be made. But to come out and say that ICANN has no legitimacy, is making decisions inappropriately, that we're going to run off the court and challenge every decision they make, to me undermines what we're trying to do in this netizen community, which is to try to practice self-governance. Are there going to be some people unhappy? Sure, because there are some winners and losers. But the idea that this is some cult hiding behind closed doors making arbitrary decisions to advantage one group over another without taking into account broad participation simply isn't true. Many of the people on this panel were at Yokohama this summer and have been at other meetings. You've seen wide open meetings. You've seen input. I alone have gotten, and I'm sure my colleagues here have gotten even more, probably a couple of hundred questions over the last few weeks since my candidacy announced. I've tried to answer as many of them as possible. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very open process, and if I'm elected to the board, I will do what I can to continue to get input from as many people. But at some point or other, ICANN has to make decisions, because if it doesn't make decisions, that in itself is a decision.
Emerson, did you want to get in before? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Did you go? Yeah. I think that the biggest risk is that the at-large membership itself may be subject to capture, not just ICANN, but the at-large membership itself. And why is that? That's because, first of all, certain interests are already hardwired into ICANN. If you look at the organizational chart, here's one right here. You can't see it, but it's in color.
You have a URL.
Okay.
You can put it up.
You have it. It gives certain interests already choices of directors, business, intellectual property, technologists. They already get to choose directors. Then there's the at-large membership. They opened it up this summer so that people supposedly from the educational and general user communities could actually register and become part of ICANN. But ICANN didn't really tell people about it. So who were the people who went and registered? The intellectual property interests, the technologists, and big business. They easily organized. They got candidates on this ballot, and the general user community did not. That's the risk here, is that the at-large membership is going to get captured. The at-large membership is really the check on all the specialized interests that are hardwired into ICANN. Perhaps appropriately, it might be okay for ICANN to have specialized interest in there, but if this is a checks and balance, and the at-large membership is supposed to be the check, we've got a problem. I don't think that the membership probably represents the educational and general user community.
And do you have a sense of what you'd want to do to fix that or to forestall the problem of capturing the at-large membership?
We have to have an informational campaign, and I think you're doing a good job here of getting the word out that ICANN's important. I think we have to make it easier for people to actually register and vote. I told a lot of people about ICANN, and they got on, and they couldn't figure it out. They have pieces of mail coming from the post office, emails, and then they're supposed to get a number off the actual website itself. But it's too complicated.
Gotcha.
A lot of the general users are not that sophisticated. This may not sound very sophisticated to have to do all that, but a lot of them are not that sophisticated.
Gotcha.
And then finally, another thing that happened that was right at the end of the at-large registration period, ICANN servers go down, and that's when the big rush of the general public was out there trying to register. So I suspect many more people didn't register than did register. So.
Gotcha. I want to keep the questions rolling, but I also want to somehow keep us on a thread. So I want to invoke what Andrew L. Shapiro calls a 30-second intervention. So at this stage, you guys are in for 30-second interventions, and I hope we can just limit it to that. Carl, go first.
In the words of one of ICANN's founders, hooey as far as the openness. ICANN is more closed than a group I've used to work with, the National Security Agency. ICANN is very, very, is very secretive. But ICANN has been given dual roles, one of which is to enact policy, the other is to create a credible organization. They've taken the role of enacting policy first without creating an organization that we can trust. And I believe that is absolutely backwards. We have an organization I wouldn't trust with anything right now.
Harris, for your 30 seconds.
I just have one quick question for Professor Tiller. How does he know who's registered? No one has informed me that I can get access to registration, and my suspicion is, in fact, most of the people registered are not from corporations or organized interests, but that's just a suspicion.
You mean by name specifically, not just raw numbers?
Yeah, just raw, what is their background? He made accusations that he knows who the electorate is, that somehow it's rigged.
The American Intellectual Property Law Association sent an email out to its 15,000 members to register for ICANN.
I also believe Barbara's organization did, too.
Right, technologists and intellectual property lawyers. Those are the ones I said are hardwired, already knew what ICANN's about.
You're a lawyer. Tell me again how you know who's registered. The answer is you don't.
I don't know specifically who's
making it up. Just want to make sure the audience understands that.
I think ICANN's consensus is made up.
Yes, for your 30 seconds, Barbara, yes.
Well, I'd like to address several of these issues. First of all, I think Emerson wasn't saying he knew. He said he was concerned. And I think that what Larry was saying about Berryson just taking over, I think that this is a case where a number of us are in agreement and disagree with Harris. My main concern is that the trademark interests, in fact, have undue power there. And I personally do not think that ICANN should be making trademark policy, period. And that, in fact, it's not clear ICANN should be making any policy at all. ICANN was really supposed to be doing technology. That's what they say they're doing. They don't claim that they're doing policy, and yet they are doing policy. And in particular, ICANN is not a law-making organization, but they are, in effect, behaving as one when they make trademark law.
Larry.
My disagreement with Harris might be from my background. I mean, you look at this as a lobbyist, and you say, it looks great. I look at it as a constitutionalist, and I say, this looks fundamentally flawed. And it's flawed not because I'm arguing that people should make no decisions. Obviously, that's a bad decision. But they should be making decisions in a way that minimize the policy role that ICANN plays right now in setting policy for the Internet. So they can recommend procedures for dispute resolution, which different TLDs might adopt or registrars ought adopt, but they should not use their power to leverage one particular view over the Internet as a whole. That's just inappropriate. Now, if they had some democratic legitimacy, if there was a strong democratic process that led to people being involved, if there were wide participation in the world community that supported ICANN, that's a different story. But I agree with Carl. They have not, though, you know, I have great respect for many of the people on the board, including Esther in particular. ICANN has not yet earned the right to be policymakers for the world. And until they do, their decision should be, how do I minimize my policymaking responsibilities and make sure a diversity of policies can develop in the Internet context?
Okay, I want to keep questions rolling, both modes of perception. Yes, go ahead.
Identify ourselves?
Sure, if you like.
Is this on? Yes, it is. Good afternoon, folks. My name is David Aiken. I'm a newspaper reporter from Toronto. I report for a daily that distributed in Canada. And I speak to you as seven Americans vying to represent Canadians and Mexicans as a North American. And let me posit this in the sense that many people, perhaps outside the United States, are quite excited about the possibility that ICANN may, in fact, become a policy body. Here's the reason. I hope you'll bear with me and treat this assumption. That the law passed by Congress in the United States is essentially the de facto law of the Internet, simply because of the commercial influence of American Internet companies. If you'd like to do business with Cisco, you're probably likely going to have to know something about American commercial law, be you in Venezuela or Canada or Belgium for that matter. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of chance for Internet users in other parts of the world, in the United States, to have an impact on making law in Washington, specifically when it comes to the Internet. We're talking copyright law, law on cryptography, law on privacy. And there's a great opportunity here, ICANN being 80,000 people from all over the world voting for a body that's going to make rules or recommendations about something, that there might be the chance to say, let's see if ICANN can't be that body that can recommend to the lawmakers in Washington or to any other lawmakers who are asking for some help to say, this might be the opportunity. It's certainly not perfect, and as a constitutional lawyer, I think this would be an exciting time to say, wow, let's figure out how we might ought to do that. So I'm interested to hear your perspective on that, and to say, bearing with me that assumption that U.S. law for now is the de facto law of the Internet, and that no one outside the United States has a chance to, real great way, have much input into how that law is created.
So I'm going to take a bite of that.
A few S there, thanks.
Lyman, then Harris.
Just a real quick clarification. Mexico, as it turns out, is not part of North America for the purposes of, but your point is still perfectly valid. Right, exactly. The issue is really, when you talk about how excited people in the rest of the world are that there may come into existence a body in which you could effectively debate and resolve issues that affect people all over the world in something other than the halls of the U.S. Congress, that's precisely the sort of you know, grand hope and fear, in some cases, that has been added to the mandate that ICANN started out with. If you look at the very narrow scope that was granted to ICANN in the original agreement with the Department of Commerce, you know, they're supposed to essentially manage an administrative process in a very limited space. Almost as soon as they, well, actually long before they were created, the arguments began to start about to what extent we could use ICANN as a vehicle for creating this larger and more policy-centered kind of organization that would recognize the existence of something that we might call the Internet community that transcends national borders. And as an individual, I'm tremendously excited about that prospect, too. I think what you're hearing from a number of people on the panel here is that until ICANN has, and it's not even clear that they will ever reach this point, but certainly until they have established legitimacy in an arena in which they currently do not enjoy a natural or immediate or inherent legitimacy, the actions that they might take in that policy space are necessarily suspect. Not because they're good actions or bad actions, but because there is no legal foundation for them. And this is not just a myth. This is not just sort of, you know, a bunch of people. I'm not a lawyer, but a bunch of other people. This is not just lawyers, you know, picking nits in order to make a point. It's extraordinarily important because if we do this wrong, we may not get another chance. That I think is something that has motivated, certainly motivated me to go to the effort of you know, becoming a candidate, going through this process and so forth, is that this may be the only chance we get. And if we really screw this up, the consequences could be stuck with them for many, many years.
So Harris, then Carl, and don't feel like all of you have to speak to every question. Go ahead.
On this, I guess I would disagree with the premise of the question, and I would be closer to Professor Lessig. I don't think ICANN should be going into these broad-based Internet governance issues. We may disagree about the particular issue of trademarks and whether that should be handled within the ICANN purview currently, but certainly on issues of privacy, taxation, and these other issues, I don't believe ICANN could or should get involved. In addition, another part of your premise of your question I would disagree with, which is that other governments don't influence policy here in the U.S. I would say on the contrary. I'm thinking, for example, of the privacy issue. Over the past year and a half or so, the United States and the European Union were involved in intense discussions about privacy policy, and even though clearly the so-called safe harbor provision is kind of a band-aid to temporarily get us through a trade war, that issue is an example of how other governments, in this case in the European Union, had tremendous influence potentially in the long term on privacy on the Internet. Issues of taxation, again, the Europeans are going in a different direction in terms of Internet taxation than the U.S. government. So I think there are many policy areas that at least other developed economies will be influencing in the short term. Now, it is true, I believe, that the developing countries and peoples in the developing countries, at least in the short term, are not going to have much impact on many of these policy issues that we are now dealing with in Washington and in state capitals. But I think in terms of the developed economies, the U.S., in fact, does not have the freedom and flexibility that it may have had a couple of years ago.
So Carl and then Emerson and then Larry, and don't feel like you all have to answer this.
Okay, I'm a firm believer that we shouldn't lie to ourselves. And we are establishing a supranational government here. The UDRP is a supranational law. So an organization that lies to itself by saying it is engaged merely in technical coordination of the Internet shouldn't be allowed to engage in the creation of a supranational government simply because it isn't truthful. Now, there's plenty of work that can be done in the context of ICANN with regard to technical coordination. For example, I don't know how many of you know, but we lost the .com domain for several hours to a large part of the world a few weeks ago. And what did ICANN say about it? Nothing particular, no big deal. You know, that was a major loss of stability of the Internet. ICANN could have stepped forward and actually started to impose some technical control over how the DNS is run to make sure that this kind of failure doesn't occur again. But what did they do? They simply enacted more rules on saying that you can't pre-register names in the yet-to-be-enacted new TLDs.
Emerson.
I think that this distinction between technical and policy decision-making is really perhaps not the one we should make. It seems to me in cyberspace, about all the technical decisions you make are policy decisions because they have economic, social, political implications to them. So I would say let's call it policy decision making, and here's a good reason why. If you call it technical decision making, who's going to be out there calling for transparency? Because after all, it's just technical decision making. Let's just get technologists to do it. Who's going to be calling for broad participation from the public? It's just a technological decision. What does the public know about technological decisions? Where will be the need for process so decisions are fair for just technical decisions? I think we got to get away from that distinction. Let's call it policy decision making, because once you call it policy decision making, you can attach transparency, broad participation, and process values that are associated with policy making. That's the only way to really get this organization making proper decisions.
Yeah, Larry and then Barbara, and don't feel that you all have to answer the question.
First, I want to say about Harris Miller's agreement with my position that what Harris Miller said was nonsense. Actually, I do think that ICANN has an opportunity to experiment and try to facilitate much better input into decision-making processes by a diverse and a large internet community. I think the Berkman Center has experimented with some of these and designed deliberative polling structures that are still being talked about as possible experiments to facilitate input from people into this process, and I think that's a good thing for ICANN to do. But until there's some credibility, this is just advisory. This is just a slow input process that we listen to and we see how much we agree with and how much makes sense, and we try to integrate as the process gets going. As to the point about policy versus technology, I just joined the EFF board. EFF was founded by a group of people, including Mitch Kapoor. Mitch Kapoor's one of his many genius insights into the way of the world was architecture is politics. So when we talk about technology, obviously technology implements policy. And there's no way to avoid the fact that how the code of the Internet gets built will affect the kinds of values the Internet has. And I think we should be beyond that. We should know that's just the way things are. But I think there still is an important discipline that comes from keeping the eyes focused on what ordinary people typically mean by technical decisions, the kind of thing that Carl was talking about as the sort of things the Internet really, the technical parts of the Internet are worried about. As Carl described it, the end-to-end movement of IP packets. According to that, that's a policy decision. The principle of end-to-end is a policy decision. It was a founding principle of the recent Internet. And I think that's a policy decision we should continue to implement, but it's in that sense technical. And the thing I'm worried about is when we start saying, yes, let's become policymakers. Now, I am agreeing with what Harris is saying. let's become policymakers. That's an excuse for making a bunch of decisions which ICANN has no legitimacy to be making. Privacy decisions, I think the list that Harris made was excellent. A bunch of decisions which we have no sanction to make. And I would want to find ways to discipline the organization to avoid that.
Barbara. Yes. First of all, I want to agree with the questioner that decisions that ICANN makes have impact on most of the world, and that most of the world has no input into those decisions and will not have input for the foreseeable future. I feel a little bit of a disconnect in this conversation because one of the things that we're talking about is what are some of the major problems with ICANN and how we would fix them. And I think it's important to talk about that, but I think we also have to remember this organization chart. And we have to remember the UDRP, Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, and we have to remember who is in there now, who has power, who has control. If any of us is elected to the board, there will be only one vote. And no single person, in all likelihood, can make major changes. We can try to make some changes. I've actually thought about what changes might I be able to affect were I elected. And that's why I gave my answer of policy and procedure, because I think that's a change which is a chance that could be made. Are there other changes I would like to see made? There are indeed major changes I would like to see made. But when we talk about this election, please keep in mind the political realities we're dealing with. You have to think about the long-term changes you would like to see made, and that's very important to do, and it's very important to be critical. It's very important to write and talk about these things. You also have to think about how you can bring them about, and bringing them about will be a slow process because there are a lot of forces who don't want to see these changes happen.
I want to keep the conversation rolling a bit, so let me just put what I hope is a crystallizing kind of question. I heard a talk by Lonnie Guinier recently who said there are multiple kinds of governance, and two distinctions to be aware of, she said. One was there's a representation model of government where somebody being elected says, I have a particular constituency, they're the people that put me here, and more or less it's my job to represent them. I should stand in for their interests in an assembly in which I am but one vote, and other interests are arrayed around the table, and I will push for mine. I have some constituency, I represent it, I poll it when I can to figure out where they're at on an issue, and I do what I can to be their advocate. Now she says another model is the trustee model. The trustee model says, I am here to think hard and make really good decisions, and I might have constituencies, but the primary reason I'm here is just to sort of do the right thing. And I put out before the electorate, here are my qualifications, here's what I've done, here's my general orientation, and if I get appointed, like somebody to the FCC gets appointed, the Federal Communications Commission, it's then my job just to make difficult calls, and if you don't like it at the end of the day, don't reelect me or I won't run again. And I'm curious whether these two models or some third illustrates your own thinking about, as one person on a board supposed to represent all of North America, what a daunting task. You're supposed to be the North American representative on the ICANN board. Which seems more appealing to you, the representative model, the trustee model, or something in between? Maybe this is suitable for the old computer thing. So give it a shot on the type thing. Say again?
I don't understand.
You don't understand the question?
Yeah.
I do. Lyman seems to understand the question, but that doesn't mean Barbara does.
You say that one is active, one is passive, one is...
I guess I'm just asking...
I mean,
what do you see your job as being on the board? Are you representing somebody? Are you there to make, what's your job on the board? Maybe that's a more simple way to put it.
I suspect that you'll be able to tell from my answer what the question means. I'm going to jump in and just say that.
Yeah, go ahead.
That my instinct tells me that every director on the ICANN board should view his or her responsibility according to the trustee model, simply because the issues that ICANN faces, whether you maintain a very strict control over ICANN's remit or allow it to expand as it gains legitimacy in the process of getting further representation,
is going to be so important that you have to view it as a trustee. However, I want to point out that one of the reasons to have an at-large presence on the board, and one reason why I think at least half the directors on the board should be at-large directors, is because if you think about the strength of different voices, the voice of the intellectual property constituency and corporate voices and so forth are going to be heard very loudly on the ICANN board, almost no matter how you structure it. The civil society voice is going to be much harder to assert in the face of the realities of resources and so forth. About 2 weeks ago, we had a fundraiser here in Boston for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which Professor Lessig mentioned a minute ago, and it was a perfectly natural thing to do. We're trying to help them defray the cost of their legal defense in several cases that I'm sure you're all familiar with. It's never occurred to anyone to hold a fundraiser for a large corporation. My small company is part of a large corporation. We're part of Verizon. I don't think anyone in this room would, you know, consider for a moment that Verizon needs anyone to hold a fundraiser so that they can hire lawyers to make their opinions known in ICANN or any other forum. And so whereas I would, if I were just simply typing an answer, which would be short and sweet, I would type in trustee. But I think it's going to be extremely important to select people for the at-large positions who will be very effective in carrying that message to the board. We may not be literally trying to represent North America, whether or not it includes Mexico. But we need to be conscious of the fact that getting that individual perspective heard is a much harder job, just inherently harder job.
Gotcha. Emerson.
Well, I was just going to say, given the current structure of ICANN, where certain interests are already embedded and they get their directors on the board, the North American representative has to be an advocate for the general user community, not a trustee. If we were to wipe out this structure where supporting organizations didn't get to choose their own directors, and it was a direct election by the at-large membership, the trustee model would be great. But that's not how ICANN's currently designed.
Gotcha. Do you want to get in, Harris, or you're...
Yes, to not always answer every question. I answer
them
there.
Excellent. Good. All right, well then, on to the next question. Ben, from the students, what's the next question we have? Catherine Porter. Catherine, are you here? Please tell me you're here. Ah, wonderful. So, we think you want to know, if ICANN is not supposed to be a super regulatory internet agency, then how is consensus supposed to emerge on how to handle internet policy? How is consensus going to happen on internet policy? I don't know if this is worthy of the typing thing. Carl, why don't you just grab it?
One of our difficulties in the internet is it's so multicultural and so diverse that the word consensus itself is somewhat of a dangerous concept. It has been used in the context of ICANN in a way that leads to no belief that the person declaring consensus actually has measured it accurately. I assert that we should throw away that word and use instead clear issues, clearly articulated, with clear votes that are clearly counted from a clear electorate.
Yeah, Harris.
I serve, as I mentioned, as president of the World Information Technology and Services Alliance, 41 different countries, and we do have a very active policy group. And we come together and fight about issues, and I do mean fight, because there are very different opinions from developing countries and developed economies. And in most cases, though not all cases, we do develop a consensus. And how do we do that? By laying out the issues with as much conciseness and clarity as possible, trying to see if there's common position, and trying to work from there to a general agreement as to the way to proceed. I was involved in the International YCK Cooperation Center, which was 180-some countries trying to make policy about how to deal with the Y2K problem. There weren't as many policy issues, one might argue, but nevertheless, you had to have developing countries, developed economies come together, and I was on the steering committee. We were able to develop, in most cases, a consensus there. So I do believe it is possible by getting the dialogue going, by bringing people into the room, by giving time for exposure. Ultimately, Carl is right. There may be times when you simply have to make a decision and vote it up or down because, as I said before, sometimes not making a decision by waiting for a consensus to emerge is, in fact, making a decision. But I think I'm still convinced within the internet community, and with what I've seen of ICANN so far, it is possible to develop consensus on most of the issues that ICANN needs to decide over the next, into the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Lyman, and then Perlmutter, 37.
I think we may have actually missed Catherine's question. I think the way I read it, I think what she was asking was, if not ICANN, then what? In other words, if ICANN is not going to take on the mantle of a policy-setting organization for an internet community that's larger than a single national government, then what organization will? And I think that my own answer to that would be that I believe that I can imagine a future for ICANN in which it gains the legitimacy of the population that it's intended to serve that would enable it to play that role. But at the moment, we have no organization that has a mandate, a specific mandate to play that role, and that's part of our problem because all we have is ICANN, therefore we look at ICANN with starry eyes, essentially, and we would like it to be more than it is capable of being right now.
Gotcha. Carl, 30 seconds, please, and then
I'm going to get the glasses on.
Okay, with regard to admitting people to the forum, inside ICANN, the forum for creating policy with regard to the domain name system is the DNSO, yet that forum does not allow individuals, and I would be surprised if more than a handful of people in this room have qualifications to enter that forum and engage in the debate inside ICANN on the formation of domain name policy.
Barbara.
My reaction to the question was, which policy does she have in mind? It seems to me that a lot of the issues that we debate, a lot of the policy issues are things that we might attempt to try to make no longer issues by simply changing the technology. One of the things that I see happening is that the domain name policy of limiting the number of top-level domain names has created an artificial scarcity where one does not need to exist. If we simply opened up the domain name space, created lots of top-level domains, allowed the registrars to create their own policies within those domains at their own choosing, and people could sign up for them or not, we could diffuse a lot of these questions by simply moving them away out of ICANN altogether and making the trademark issue hopefully go away to a large extent. At least that would be my hope.
Gotcha. All right, I want to get some more voices in here. Yes, and students, you're welcome to signal you want the mic and an echoing thing. Yes, go ahead.
It does. This is a multi-level question, but I'd like, if possible, for everyone to come up with an opinion on what I'm going to ask. A positive scenario where ICANN continues to make decisions or act outside of what some people on the panel perceive to be a legitimate scope. Posit a scenario where ICANN acts in ways that seem undemocratic or guarded and hidden. Are there vulnerabilities in the ways in which ICANN was constituted which could generate good grounds for lawsuits? Under what circumstances would those be appropriate? And where would you most find ICANN vulnerable?
So if elected to the board, who will you sue first?
This, by the way, let me just finish. This falls under the notion of government by enforcement as opposed to the sort of exogenous imposed governance.
Yeah. Larry.
Well, this was at the core of the debate at the formation of ICANN, and a lot of the criticism surrounding making ICANN a California nonprofit was that the ability to police the behavior of a board in a California nonprofit organization is extremely thin. And the compromise that was agreed to was an outside structure, which was the at-large members, who would be a path for somebody to enter into the organization and attempt to bring it back to its charter. Now, in addition to that, I'm not even sure what the current name of this is, but a basic internal review process, like a constitutional court that one imagines functioning within ICANN, but to check ICANN. But I think the bottom line legal fact is there's extremely little that can be done through law to regulate what ICANN is doing. And that, I think, emphasizes what Barbara was saying, which I think is really quite insightful about a strategy for dealing with the danger ICANN presents. Architect the problems so that the problems go away. That's the key solution.
And so what she's saying when she says, let's multiply the domain names, the TLDs, and give them lots of room for policy, their own policy, is describing a competitive market of policymakers, right? So that if there's a problem in one and you have lots of competition here, people can switch out or move to something else, and you have what we create in real space, which is competition among people who are, in essence, policymakers. But because you don't concentrate the power, it doesn't require this grandiose statement of we're making policy for the Internet as a whole. Although, you know, in a deeply realist sense, obviously it's policy to say that we ought to have many different TLDs doing lots of different judgments. But I think that's a better policy that avoids the problem of capture at ICANN than the one that says let's concentrate power and then worry about how we're going to create political structures that are going to get us the right answer.
Gotcha. Anybody else want to speak to the lawsuits question?
Having been a person who was sort of getting very close to doing that, California has a large number of laws which grant rights to members under California law. ICANN has spent a large amount of money to try to avoid those obligations. I don't believe that it has succeeded. I mean, this will be, of course, a legal question, but I believe that there is substantial room for anybody who is an elector of ICANN, somebody who cast a vote, to bring an action to obtain things like the membership list so we can verify whether or not the elections have been validly held and whether or not a significant number of people have been excluded from the process.
Barbara and then Harris.
A number of people for whom I have a lot of respect have advocated bombing ICANN.
Bombing ICANN?
Well, not literally, figuratively bombing, yes.
I see.
Destroying ICANN, that they feel that the world would be better off without ICANN. I've argued with him about this, not because I'm a candidate for the board, although maybe it's the other way around. I'm a candidate for the board because I don't quite share their view. What worries me is that if ICANN were destroyed, what would come in its place could well be worse, in particular WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, I think is the most likely follow-up to ICANN. And even though a number of us are concerned about the lack of democratic processes within ICANN and the unequal representation that some groups have over others within ICANN, within WIPO, I think there would be not even the claim to have democratic representation. It would be much worse. The other alternative I've heard is that the Department of Commerce will take over and that we'll have due process. I'm a bit skeptical about that, and that certainly doesn't address the issues raised by our friends from Canada, for example. But in any case, my decision was to try to work within the structure, flawed though I think it is, and hope to make it better. If at some point it seems like an impossible task, I might join those who feel that the bomb should be thrown.
Well, you can bomb from the inside. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Harris. I'm sorry. I'd like Harris to get his dig in. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let him finish his question.
Oh, I'm all right. Go ahead.
As many of you know, for several years, a very fine federal judge named Harold Green ran our telecommunications policy. I think Judge Green was well-intended, a good man from everything I know of him. I didn't know him personally, but I think generally we feel that having one federal judge running telecommunications policy is probably not good for the policy or for the process. One can envision a situation, which I hope will not occur, that people are disgruntled with the ICANN process but running off the court, and before you know it, some federal judge or panel of federal judges is running ICANN. At the end of the day, that would be, in my mind, a very unfortunate set of circumstances. I think what ICANN needs to continue to do is develop as much consensus as possible, try to find non-legalistic ways of dealing with issues. I know many of the people on this panel running against me are very upset with the UDRP. I think the UDRP has made a couple of bad decisions. I think the Crewe decision was a bad decision. But at the end of the day, I think the Uniform Dispute Resolution process is working reasonably well. People who lose in the UDRP still are entitled to go to court if they want to. So we should see this as a model where people are trying to come up with a fairly simple and straightforward way of solving a complex problem. Now, at the end of the day, is Carl or other people entitled to go in and file lawsuits? Certainly they will, and certainly they can. But I would hope that the people who support the idea of the Internet community do not believe at the end of the day they want to have federal judges running ICANN.
Carl.
With regard to the DNS, everybody is believing that there is one
one domain name system. There can be an infinite number of domain name systems. I, for example, have not used the Department of Commerce ICANN root system of the domain name system for years. I have never had a failure. I was not subjected to the .com disaster that occurred a few weeks ago. It's perfectly possible for people to say, to hell with ICANN, and set up their own DNS systems. It's just like different people can publish phone books, whether on CD-ROMs or on the web or what have you, and you go to the one that gives you the answers you like best.
But Carl, there's no law saying that can't happen right now.
No, everybody can do it. ICANN has put it into their contracts, however, that they will not consider a TLD application for a new TLD if that TLD somehow gives credence to the fact or to the notion of alternative or competitive root systems. ICANN is contractually obligating new TLDs to avoid engaging in this kind of competitive
.com, which is part of the ICANN web of contracts, is also in your alternative route, right? They're not restricted from listing.
Right, just like my cable TV company carries NBC and other channels.
Yeah.
It's just the root system just chooses who to select.
Yeah. Emerson?
I do think there are some vulnerabilities with California nonprofit law and probably some constitutional risk for ICANN, but I actually think the real legal risk perhaps for ICANN is actually its perception. Especially with legislators in Congress. Sooner or later, they're going to realize these technical decisions are policy decisions, and they're going to feel that this is encroaching upon their potential policymaking power. So they're going to scrutinize ICANN. If you watch ICANN now, you can tell that this is an organization avoiding Congress. Everything they say is, we're just doing technical decision-making, we're just doing technical decision-making, because as soon as they say we're doing policy decision-making, the Commerce Committee and other members of Congress are going to jump in and say, what's going on? The other big vulnerability, I think, is with the UDRP. I support the UDRP in a reformed way. Right now, it's made a lot of inconsistent decisions. It allows for forum shopping by trademark holders. It's given away sites that were set up for protests, such as WalmartSucks.com, to Walmart when someone else had registered it. A religious site, Corinthians.com, that was set up with scriptures on it, given to a Brazilian soccer team who complained about it. So these are going to make it very vulnerable. What ICANN needs is actually an appeal system within itself to make this decision-making mechanism consistent.
All right. I like the idea of coming up with creative, simple solutions for problems like trademark. What I don't like is the idea that ICANN then imposes it on every potential competitor. So the idea that the problem with the UDRP is not, in my view, particular problems with particular decisions. I don't really think it's appropriate to second-guess the decision at this stage. I haven't read the record to know that. It's the idea that we impose a single solution across them all, and then after we impose a single solution, we're going to have to create an appeal process to decide how we resolve the single solution across them all. It seems to me to be inviting too great a structure of governance far beyond what we appropriately should be doing. The narrow question we should be focusing on is facilitating solutions. If UDRP is a good idea, people will select it. TLDs will select it. And if TLDs select it because it's a good idea, then I have no problem with UDRP.
Isn't that just a race to the bottom, though? I mean, won't you get a bunch of new TLDs that's in their interest, if they want to have lots of registrants, to say, no rules, come register away?
No, because TLDs don't exist in a legal vacuum. It's always the case that the trademark law continues to apply to people who are facilitating violations of trademark law. So if in fact
the NSI has never had the trademark
law. Well, I mean, in this transition period there's not been, but I think if ICANN takes the position that TLDs are responsible for what TLDs are doing, or registrars are responsible for what registrars are doing, and these people become actors in the world, which look, they are, and they're subject to the rules of the world, which obviously they should be, then there is a competition for them to pick the policies which best reflect both a mix of efficiency and also respect for the rights of ordinary people holding trademarks or respect for First Amendment principles. I mean, that's
gotcha.
The mix that's got to be preserved.
Gotcha. I want to keep it rolling. I'm sorry. I just want to go to another question. Yeah.
I think Emerson hit perhaps the biggest issue that no one else has mentioned, and that is the legitimacy and sovereignty problem that ICANN has. If the internet continues to grow in importance to everyone in this room and to the whole world, government's going to want to regulate it. And I haven't seen anything in ICANN that gives it any legitimacy to impose solutions on governments. Most importantly, it's essentially a grant. It exists as a grant of the U.S. government, And the U.S. Congress has certainly shown a tremendous willingness to act unilaterally and take away what it's given. How, as an ICANN board member and someone who's helping to shape this policy, do you deal with the democratic deficit that ICANN is going to create? And how do you negotiate with all of these governments who will cut away at ICANN's authority because they sense that it lacks legitimacy and they have their own interests?
Yeah, Carl, then Harris.
Okay, the first thing, there's a disconnect between the U.S. government and ICANN right now. We have to remember that Department of Commerce told the General Accounting Office that the Department of Commerce had no intention of transferring control of the DNS route or the IP address space to ICANN. So it leaves ICANN's decision sort of this twilight zone of what do they mean? Are they going to be adopted blindly by the Department of Commerce? But with regard to getting acceptance, one has to come up with good decisions that are broadly based so that these various nations will look at the results and say, hey, these are actually good policies. They're good for our people. They're good for our businesses. They can't be U.S.-based biased, and they can't be biased in favor of a particular industry. And I think that's what's going to take to slowly build acceptance of this organization. I mean, we're entering a new whole era here with the fading of the nation state and the replacement of that with some sort of overlapping sovereignty kind of system, something like it exists in the Renaissance in Italy. And I don't know how the transition is going to occur.
Yes.
Emerson's comments carry a presupposition, which isn't accurate. Congress is already following this process. I personally have briefed 4 or 5 congressmen in the last few weeks on the ICANN election, and my staff has briefed the committee staff a couple of times, and as I mentioned earlier, I have already testified before Congress, and Congress did request the GAO study, which Carl just referred to. So Congress is already watching this issue. It seems to me that Congress started off, as you may remember, the hearing that it had 2 years ago was prepared to blast ICANN out of the water because it had become a bit of a contest between one particular corporation who remained nameless, NSI, and a bunch of other people. And ICANN, at that time, was being accused of having closed meetings, which it was proposing a $1 fee at that time. And I think Congress was loaded for bear. They were ready to blow ICANN out of the water. That ended up being an interesting hearing because right before the meeting, Esther and her board were clever enough to both withdraw the $1 fee and announce that all meetings would be open thereafter. And suddenly the hearing, instead of being a blasting of ICANN, turned out to be an attack on network solutions. It was kind of an interesting hearing. Having prepared many hearings before as a staff person, I'd never seen a hearing turn on its head quite so quickly as that one did. But the simple point is Congress is watching this. I think that the people that I work with in Congress would like to see ICANN succeed. They would like to see it remain as free as possible of government intervention. They would like to see it remain restricted in the areas in which it is working. But we shouldn't kid ourselves that somehow Congress is currently ignoring this process. They're very sensitive to it. I think the election results are going to be very positive. In this, whoever wins, I mean, all 7 candidates, I think, are well-briefed people who understand the issues. And the argument I've been making to Congress is a very simple one. The ICANN people put the election together were expecting, 10 to 15,000 people to register to vote. They missed it by X times 10. I mean, 150,000 people plus registered to vote, even with the problems that were correctly identified before. So my message to Congress is clearly people in the Internet community want to participate in these elections. They do support ICANN. It's not to say they're unhappy. Look, I only go to condo meetings when my condo roof is leaking. I understand the process. It doesn't mean people are unhappy, but I do believe they believe in the process and want to participate, and I believe Congress will keep its hands off as long as they believe that's happening.
Yeah, Barbara.
You touched on a very important issue, and I, for one, don't have a good answer, but I can give you an illustration of what can happen. ICANN, as you know, passed the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, which a number of us have criticized today. But I should add that the UDRP, for all its problems, did not give the trademark interests as much as they had expected to get, and certainly not as much as they had hoped for. And shortly after the UDRP was passed, very shortly after, the anti-cyber squatting bill came before Congress and was passed very quickly with, I think, no hearings in the House. A perfunctory hearing they'd had in the Senate. It was really a stealth bill. And the anti-cyber squatting bill is a much more draconian measure than the UDRP. It contains very severe penalties, even without the proving of any damages. So this is an example of what can happen when governments are convinced by one force or another that some decision made by ICANN is bad. And I don't know how one deals with that, because we're now dealing with real politics here, And I think the best way to deal with it is, if I'm on the ICANN board and ICANN makes a decision which I feel is a good one, or even which I feel is a compromise, because in reality that's what these decisions will be. The best you can hope for is a reasonable compromise. I will certainly do what I can to take it to the public to make sure that this kind of stealth legislation can't be pushed through.
We're starting to run out of time. I'd love to just take two questions in succession from the audience. I don't know, does somebody have the microphone right now or not? Go ahead. And then one more on the computer. Yeah, go ahead.
Ms. Simons and Mr. Chapin both mentioned radio as something that you were fearing the internet was becoming. When I see radio, I see it as something full of promise, in that it's a medium of providing copyrighted information for free to an audience of unknown millions, as well as an advertising-driven revenue model. So I guess my question is, what is this nightmare vision of the internet that any of you have that you think that you want ICANN to prevent?
And is there one more question you want to take? I just get the mic over to somebody. Let's see. Hang on, let's just get two more questions in so that we can do one in. Yeah, for a quick question. Yeah, go ahead now, and then they can choose to answer the one, and Ben can put up the two questions on the screen. Yeah, so turn it on at the bottom. All righty, Ben. Try now.
Last Friday afternoon, ICANN acted as a big bully and has sent out an email scaring people off from pre-registrations. I received it. So I'd like some commentary on that.
Okay, so on either of these two questions, feel free. Carl.
ICANN's bylaws say very clearly that decisions in this matter shall be passed by the domain name supporting organization, which will base it on a consensus of the various parties involved. They just simply issued it out of the blue. The board never adopted this. This is an example of what we mean by this runaway notion of consensus.
But Carl, it is just the Names Council, right? It's not the ICANN board doing it. The Names Council.
Well, the ICANN board didn't say no. They adopted it by just simply letting it happen. It's their obligation to say, no, we have a part of this corporation which is running amok, just like most of the staff is.
And a comment on either two questions, Larry?
I wanted to pick up on the radio comment. I think Barbara's point is actually, there's a very interesting history of how radio got to the way it is. And people at the very beginning of radio spoke about radio in the way that people now talk about the potential of the internet, where organizations wouldn't get allocated rights or get control over large space of the radio space by virtue of government-granted allocated rights, but you'd have a lot greater shared medium. Now, that didn't happen with radio, although there's a potential now that it could again happen with radio. That vision, people are bringing the model of the internet now to radio, and radio could become a shared medium that facilitates lots of interactions in a bottom-up way. I think the key here, though, is to preserve what I think you see as the value of what you're describing, what's good about radio, and preserve that in the context of the internet. And that's where I am worried that ICANN has a potentially harmful role. Because to the extent ICANN becomes usable by a very significant interest out there who are interested in making sure that the potential for decentralized distribution of content and information is not realized, the extent ICANN becomes a tool that can be exercised against the vision of the internet that represents what we believe the internet is and what you're describing as the radio, potential for radio, ICANN is a danger. And I think the critical function that we've got to ensure, and this election was a first step in that direction, is that the organization not become captured by a vision that would turn it into radio of the 1950s.
Paris.
I want to respond to question number two. This conversation today has been excellent. We talked about principles and trying to do various philosophical questions, but folks, there's money involved. You know, billions of dollars, network solutions, market cap, billions of dollars just for registering names. This is not, for many people, an abstract discussion. And we find a lot of people talking about principles or hiding behind the fact they want to make a lot of money. And to the extent ICANN can try to prevent people from ripping off other people, I think they should try to do so. And I think that's what they were trying to do with their announcement.
And just to be clear what happened, a number of companies or institutions are applying to ICANN to operate a new top-level domain. ICANN will apparently choose only a subset of these applications. And some of the people applying are apparently telling the world, come pre-register your name with us, and when we get approved by ICANN, you will have it waiting for you. And of course, I guess if they're not approved, the idea is the money will be wasted by the consumer.
That's right. It's a simple, in my mind, consumer ripoff. I'm not saying that top-level domain name shouldn't be expanded. They should, and I support that. But claiming and taking people's money who may misunderstand the process, to me, is a simple ripoff. Period. End of statement.
Yeah. Barbara, then Emerson.
Well, I feel a little uncomfortable going back to the first question, but it was sort of addressed at me. And Larry was right. I had in mind the very early years of radio. There's an excellent history by a Princeton professor, Susan. Does someone just know the last name? I can't remember. What? Oh, Esther, right. Esther.
We'll look it up.
Well, I have the book at home. I meant to bring it with me. Anyway, on the very early years. Yeah, no, that's just, she wrote an article. So, you think about the article in communication.
Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah. All right. Back to this. In the early years of radio, who started talking about the early 20th century, you can find quotes, people talking about radio the way they've been talking about the internet in the past few years. It was originally envisioned as being this wonderful medium that would allow people to communicate with one another cheaply or freely, that would allow information to be become an information provider. It was supposed to be non-commercial. In the 20s and 30s, the U.S. government started regulating radio, started deciding who would have access to various bands and so on. And this early enthusiasm was basically eliminated and radio was tamed. My concern is that the internet is going to be similarly tamed and commercialized to the point where this last medium, this is really the last medium we have, which is not controlled by large corporate interests, will in fact become not the same as radio and TV, but similar in many ways.
Emerson.
The second question illustrates the value of some of these top-level domains. Some of them are going to be worth millions, if not billions of dollars. Why is ICANN giving those away for $50,000? They're giving away money printing machines. Maybe they should be auctioned. Let the market work on some of these top-level domains. Those that are worth less than $50,000 will go for less than $50,000. Those that are worth millions will go for millions. ICANN can use this money to support the organization is in money, you know, has money troubles right now. I say let the market work on top-level domains.
Carl, 20 seconds.
Beware of Greek-sparing gifts. When the intellectual property people tell you that they are doing consumer protection, I worry.
All right, I'd like to end our session with one more use of the computers that we went so much trouble to tape down and turn on and everything else. So I'd love to end actually picking up where Emerson left off with a question of money. If you were charged after being elected to the ICANN board of chairing a task force on how ICANN can pay its bills, such as they may be in the future, what revenue streams would you think would be good or bad? What should ICANN do to raise money? Or what shouldn't it do to raise money? What's your inclination? Obviously, you might change your mind, but do you have a sense going in for what should and shouldn't be its means of raising money? And if you just want to try to punch a few words into the computer, we'll see if it actually works.
I don't have a chat anymore.
Well, it feels like chat, doesn't it? No pressure, Larry.
Please, go ahead. Yeah. Raising money is hard.
I'm going to say we're all theoreticians here.
Ah, yes. Expenses should be kept low. They just don't spend a lot. All right. Well, we are going to reconvene here at 7:30 for a forum that I think will be different from this, and not because this was a bad one, but I hope will be different than this, just to mix things up a little bit. There's clearly a huge range of issues to be discussed, and we're just sort of getting our feet wet in them. And I'm curious to see whether the designated hitter reporter people who are supposed to be thinking up good questions right now will be asking them how their questions will compare to the ones we've had today. Please join me in thanking our technical people and the candidates for having made such an interesting thing.
I don't know.